Begin the current daf, Maseches Bamitzia, daf Ayin Dalad. Begin on the top line of the Yamid, where the Gemara continues with the related discussion from the previous daf, which had discussed a related halacha from the previous halachas, which was discussing regarding if someone sends an agent to buy something for him, and he doesn't, regarding the liability that that person has. So the Gemara segues with a related discussion. Amar Rava. Hani Beit Lasa, the Yavi Zuz Lachad. Regarding three individuals, they gave money to one person. L'mizvan L'humidi, to buy something for them. Now, but that person didn't buy for all three. He only bought for one of those three people. Now that says Rav Zavin Lekulu. He has purchased for all of them because since they all equally give him money, the fact that whatever his intention was, but ultimately he's holding money of all three of them, and therefore the purchase is for all three. Now, that's what the Gemara explains, but V'loy Marim, we didn't say this, El D'loy Tzar V'chasim, only if the money wasn't bundled and sealed of inish luchodei of every single person having their money independently. Rather, it was all together. So therefore, since he's taking their sum total money and buying something, it's not considered for that one person. It's considered all of them. Avol tzar v'chasim inish luchodei. But says Rava, if each one's money was separately bundled and sealed, then leman dezavin zavin, then whoever's money he took from that bundle, which was sealed, and he purchased from him, that's who he purchased, leman dezavin zavin. But when he didn't buy, because that's obviously definitive whose money he used, and that would be considered bought for that person. Now, related to this, about something being sealed, and regarding acquisitions, so Amar Papi Mishmei de Rava, related halacha, he says, Haisi tumta, this seal, which the storekeepers would put a certain seal and a sign on the barrels of wine that they would take from the wholesalers when they would make a huge bulk purchase, but they wouldn't be able to have all these barrels in their store, so they would leave it there in the storehouse of the warehouse owners of the people that made the wine, and then they would take one barrel every, let's say, once a month to go and take to this store. So the ones that they kept there in the warehouse, they would put a sign on it, a seal, so that it should be known that those are sold already, that they're his. So that says, Rapapi, in the name of Rava, that this situmta, this seal that they would put on those barrels, Kanya has acquired it for the storekeeper already. Now, so the Gemara is lamai hachasav, what halacha is this? I mean, he didn't do meshicha, he didn't draw it to himself, he just did this situmta, that's a kinyan for what? What does it mean it's a kinyan for? So Rav Chaviva Amar, he says, L'mekanya mamish, it means literally to be an acquisition. It's like a kinyan, just like if someone did Hagbah or Meshicha, that just putting on that seal is a kinyan. Rabban Ami, they disagree. They say, no, it's not a kinyan. You didn't actually do one of the halachic forms of a kinyan. It's L'gabuli Allah Misha Para. But it's enough of a kinyan just for the fact of when, let's say, when money is transferred. Then, although we said that that's not considered a kinyan, but it's enough if someone backs out, he gets the curse of Misha Parah. So to over here, by doing the seal, that already, each side has already obviously agreed, and he even put his seal on it, that it's his. If he backs out, then he gets the curse of the Misha Parah. That concludes the Gemara of Hilchos LeKabul Ela Misha Parah. The halacha is that it's not a full-fledged kinyan of acquisition, but rather a kinyan enough to be considered, if one of them would back out, he would get the curse of Misha Parah. But if it's in a certain location where that's their custom, where they would put their seals on the condition that through that they should be considered as if it was acquired, as if he had done Meshicha, then says the Gemara Kani, then is a full-fledged acquired, it's considered a total kinyan, because in that place, doing a handshake, putting on a sign, whatever it is that in that place is considered as if the deal is done, and that it's a kinyan here also, that would be considered a full-fledged kinyan. Now the Gemara goes back to explain the halacha of the Mishnah that said, but the Mishnah was discussing the halacha concept of pisuk, which is paying up front to get the delivery at a later point in time. Now, the halacha of pisuk could run to halachic problems. If, let's say, you give them the money now, and then it went up in price in the interim, and you get it back at a later point in time, the delivery for what was purchased, and if it's worth more now, so then it's considered that the money that you had given to the seller was like a loan, because he got to use the money without giving the product until months later. And now he's giving back something worth more than what he got, so that could be a problem about ribbis. So there's two approaches to ameliorate that problem, which is either the yatsa shar, that the market value has already been around at the time when he paid him, so he was able to get it, and therefore it's considered like it's already in the domain of the lekeach, or a more elementary way, which is called yeshlei. If the seller has the product, although it's not delivered, it's considered in the domain of the buyer, and therefore when it goes up in price, it's not going up in the domain of the lender, of the seller, who he's the borrower, so to speak, of the money, but rather in the domain of the borrower, who of the buyer, who he's like the lender of the money. Now, moreover, the Mishnah said that even if it's not completely finished, the product, but the product is there, even if it's in its raw state, as the Mishnah brought many different examples, those are considered already that yeshloi, and therefore you could do pesuk. Now, on that, there's a machlekes regarding how much in the raw state is considered yeshloi, because if you don't have it at all, so then it's not yeshloi, and then unless it's yatzar shar, you can't do pesuk. So, Omar Rav, he explains, mechusar shtayim, if it's lacking two activities, two types of jobs, two types of workings that the object needs to finish it up, then pesuk, then you could go ahead and do this forward payment with the seller, even if it wasn't yatzar shar, because we'll consider that as yeshloi, as if he already has the product, and if it's going up in the domain of the buyer. But if it's lacking shalish, three different activities to it, then it's considered like as if he doesn't have it, because it's not there. And then in pesuk, then you can't go ahead and do pesuk in that. Shmuel Amar, he disagrees. He says, no, if the malachis that are required, that are lacking in this object to be finished, are bidei adam, are things that can be done by man, a filamea place, even if it's missing 100 different parts to the finished product, you could do pesuk, because he could do it, so it's considered like yeshli, it's within his ability. But bidei shemayim, if it's something that needs the hand of heaven, if something has to happen by itself, then a filachas in the place, then even if it's missing just one element, then you can't do pesuk, because who said it's ever going to happen? And that it's as if he has it to complete it. And if it's you would not consider it as yeshli, you consider it as ainli, because ultimately he doesn't have it. That's machlekes Rav and Shmuel. And I think more asked from our Mishnah on all the different cases that it brings down on Rav and Shmuel to illustrate this halacha. So now we learn our Mishnah. The first case that the Mishnah gave us as an example was pesuk gimel agadish. You could go ahead and do pesuk of forward payment on someone's pile of grain. And that is, even though it's not finished yet, whatever it is that you're buying from him, but that's already considered as yeshloi. And that is the Gemara, but if you calculate the amount of things that are lacking in the pile of grain, first of all, it's lacking mishta b'chama l'mevish. It's missing that you have to first spread out the piles of the grain in the sun to dry out. And second of all, l'medish, then you have to thresh it. Umidra, and then you have to throw the chaff up into the ear after it was threshed, so that, which is called the malacha of zayra, the winnowing, which so therefore that it could come out, and then you can finally sell the kernels of wheat. But it's missing three different activities, and according to Rav, that shouldn't be allowed to do pesuk on, because he says the max is two, not three. So the Gemara answers, "Kigun d'shada b'chama v'yavish." The case talking about where it already was dried out in the sun, and it's still called gadish because it's still a pile of the grain. It's still in the stalks, but it's just missing two malachas, which are the dash and zaira, threshing and winnowing. Now the Gemara asks, but alu Shmuel do amar b'dei shemayim afala achas in the pesuk. According to Shmuel, that says even if it's lacking one activity, but if it's dependent on other natural forces, b'dei shemayim, then you can't do pesuk. V'hamachusa midra, it's still lacking winnowing, the b'dei shemayim. That's something that depends not on person, but rather on heaven, because it needs a very strong wind to do that, and that's not something we could create. And therefore, maybe it should be considered as ein lo according to Shmuel. Why does the Mishnah say that it's already yeshle, you can do pesuk? And that's the Gemara, no, because efshe b'nav vasa. Although generally that's how winnowing is done, and with a very uncommon wind, but you could also get rid of the chaff by doing it through a sieve. You could do it and sift it that way, and therefore, since it's possible to do it with the adam, therefore even Shmuel agrees that it's going to be considered yeshle. So the Gemara continues asking, our Mishnah said, v'ala ovit shal anovim. Then again, all these cases are the questions from the Mishnah. It's quoting it not as elaboration on the halachas of the Mishnah, but as questions on Rav and Shmuel. So it says regarding the pile of the grapes, which are put into this pit, so that could also be sold. On that, the Gemara asks, v'mechusar michmer. But first of all, you're lacking the heating up where the grapes press on each other, where they get heated up. That's one malacha that's missing. V'yuli lebei matzarta, then it's also lacking being brought to the pressing house. And it's lacking lemidish, which is the actual pressing in the wine press. Ulemingad, and then to draw the wine to the pit, which is in front of that pressing place, which is finally when you'll get the final product of the wine. So how could this guy buy the wine based on pesuk, which is going to get delivered months later? How could you consider it yeshle when it's lacking four activities, and according to Rav, it could only be lacking two? So that the Gemara explains, like Reb Chiya taught in his Braisa, which is going to be quoted shorter later on in the next case of the Mishnah, how Reb Chiya quotes it in his Braisa, that it's not on, as we say the words in our Mishnah, on the Ovit Shal Zesim. He quotes it as Al HaKoymer Shal Zesim, which is, and although in the Mishnah it said the word Matan, which is the same as the Ovit in regards to grapes, is Matan in regards to olives, which is just the pile of the olives. He taught in his Braisa the term of Koymer, which is that it's already a heated up pile of olives after they already were pressed together in this big pile. So, Hochanami ala Koymer shel anavim. So says the Gemara, we can say the same thing for Rav in the previous case of the grapes. It's not talking about just a pile of in the vat of the grapes. It's actually talking about the heated pile of grapes in that in that pile. So it's not lacking anymore the first that we described, which it's lacking michma. So the Gemara says, okay, but mechusar klas, but you're still missing three. So it's not four, it's three, but still according to Rav, the max is two. So the Gemara explains, ba'asr da'hudu zavan hudu nugget. No, it's only lacking two activities on the part of the seller. Because in that place, the custom was that it's the buyer that he goes and he draws from that place where it's pressed into the place of where the wine is kept. And therefore, since that's an activity on the buyer, the seller himself is only lacking two activities, so therefore it's only two, and therefore that's considered yeshle. So then the next case in our Mishnah, which the Gemara asks on Rav, is about a matan shel zesim, which we just quoted this before and how Rav Chiya explains it, which is going to answer the question. So regarding the pile of the vat of the olives, so the Gemara asks, how could that be considered yeshle, that you could do pisuk, but the mechusar michmer. First of all, you're lacking that, first they have to pile them, press the olives together, not the actual pressing, but having them tight together, which heats up the olives, and because that helps in the processing of the olive oil. The yulu lebedapi, then you also have to bring it into the pressing house of where you press the olives to make oil, and lemedish, the pressing, ulemingad, and the drawing of the olive oil from the place where it's pressed into another pit, which is where just the pure oil is kept. So there's the four things that are lacking. So that thing my answer is telling Reb Chiya. Reb Chiya actually taught in the Braisa to explain it's actually talking about al-koymer shel zesim. It's not in the regular the vat, but rather in the place where it already had been there. It's already heated up, and then it's kept in that other place. So it's not lacking four. So the Gemara says, okay, but okay, it's last. Still lacking three, and according to Rav, the max is two. So that thing more explains, but asr da hu dezav and ahu mingir. Again, like we said regarding to the grapes, it's only lacking two. Because the last activity is actually in that place. The custom is that the buyer, he goes and he draws from the place where it's pressed into another place to take only the olive oil. That's on the buyer, so the seller is only lacking two. That's considered enough of yeshle. Next case the Mishnah talks about, which is the question on Rav, said v'ala beitzim shel yetzer. You could also do pisuk on these little balls, these eggs of the potterers, which they make it out of clay. When they're just in those balls of clay, that is already considered yeshle. And the Gemara says, "Amai, why?" But v'machusa lefufi. First, you're lacking lefufi, which Rashi says amoldir balaz, which from the word of molding, which is that to roll it around to shape it, which is as we find the term in Masechta Shabbos melapav and havlat, that they would tie and shape the child right after the birth, which is that you roll it according to the measurement, whether big or small, and you make the concave, you make the receptacle. That's what you do with the pottery. So you're lacking that. V'yivusha, in the drying it up, I mean, it has to dry first. And the yulatuna, then bringing it into the oven, to the kiln. And then lemisav, then once it's in there, then you have to burn it, maybe you have to fire it up in the oven. And the lemepik and taking it out, so it's like a whole bunch of things. How could that be considered yeshle, according to Rav? So the Gemara answers, kikun demalafaf of yavishu. It's talking about where these balls were already shaped and already dried. Now, although they're shaped, how they call the baits, and Rashi explains that actually the term baits doesn't have to mean just the shape of an egg, but rather a term, as he said, marsh, from the term of a marsh, of a swamp. That's the term of beitza, where the earth is kneaded together with the water. It's very muddy type, where that's the term of beitza. So you could have that term even if it's already shaped and dried. So the Gemara says, okay, that takes away two, but v'ikatlas is still three things that it's lacking. I think my answer is, like we said previously, about Asr, that who dissolve and who demapik, that it's the custom is in that place, the one who buys it is the one that removes it from the oven, meaning they fire it up, they burn it there, and then whoever wants to buy opens up and takes one, so it's only lacking two activities, and therefore, according to Rav, it's going to be considered yeshle. Now, the Mishnah said, another item, v'alasid mishe shekenu bekivshin, And on the lime, if someone wants to do a prepaid, so then it's he could do pisuk from when it was already put into the kiln, into the oven where they make the lime. Now the Gemara asks, but here also the question is, v'machosim mikla. First of all, you're lacking the firing it up, v'afuke and taking it out, and umedik, and then after that, the limestone gets burnt in the oven. So then they're burnt pieces. Then they would take it out of the oven, and they would put on it a little water, and they would pile it together, and then it would just crumble by itself, the way you have like crumbled wheat that was grinded. So that's the third activity that has to be done to it. So it's lacking three things. How is that considered yeshlei? So the Gemara explains, but asuda who does oven who the custom of that location is that the one who buys it, he does the crumbling part. Meaning it's already ready. They basically did all the things. They took all the ingredients. They heated it up. Now you just got to put in a little water, and then it crumbles, and you'll have your lime. So it's the buyer that does it. So it's only lacking two things. Now that the Gemara asks, but Shmuel, the Amar b'Dei Adam afilu me'ah pais. According to Shmuel, that he says that if it's activities that can be done by a human being, it doesn't have to happen by itself. Then even if it's like 100 things, you could already do pisuk. So lama li misha shekenu b'kishin. So why does the Mishnah say that to be considered yeshloi, you have to have already put the limestone into the oven? Why? Even if you didn't put it into the oven, it should be considered already as yeshloi, because that's one of the activities of the Adam. It doesn't have to be lacking only two. It could be lacking even 100. So the Gemara says, Amy, you're right. According to Shmuel, you would say it means mishuro l'shaka b'kivshin. It means from when it's fit to be put into the oven. In other words, if the seller already prepared and organized the limestone and the wood, and he has already everything, the only thing he's lacking is putting into the oven to get it burnt up, then that's already considered yeshlei. In other words, which would exclude, if he doesn't have all the ingredients ready by him yet, then that's not considered yeshlei even according to Shmuel, because you don't have it. And therefore, that's what it says when it says Mishishiken Bekirsh, according to Shmuel, means that it's ready to be put into the oven. Now, the Gemara goes back, now that it discussed this Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, to one of the cases. So it said in the Mishnah, V'alabeitzim shel yotzer, regarding the egg, this bowl of the potterer, that's already considered yeshlei, and you can do pisuk, because there's no problem about if it goes up in the interim, because it was already considered in the domain of the buyer. So that the Gemara explains, Tanya Bar learned the Braisa, that there's a Machlokes. Meir says you cannot do pisuk on these eggs of the potterers until they're made into these eggs. That's only when it would be considered yeshlei. Only then could you do pisuk. Now that Rabbi Yisi, he disagrees. He says, when did we say that, as we said in the Mishnah, that it has to be prepared in his hand? That's ba'afr lavan. That's only by this white, by the white dust, by the white earth, which is not so common. And therefore, when they would import it, they would only import it if it was kneaded and turned into these eggs. So that's when it's considered yeshlei, because that's already that's something where it's only when it's ready made, that's when they would have it. Offer shachor, but in the black dirt, the black earth, which was commonly found, then says Rabbi Yisi, let's say Kugan Kfar Chananya v'Chavrisa, let's say the village of Chananya and its environs, or Kfar Shichin v'Chavrisa, or the village of Shichin and its environs. Then, where there black, the black dust, black dirt, the black earth was commonly found, which that's what you need, and you make earthenware vessels, you make pottery out of it. Then he says, Paiskin, then you could do Pisuk. In other words, you don't have to have it in your hand, like we said in the Mishnah, of the bowls of the potters. Because Ava Pisha in Lazah, Yesh Lazah, because then you have the other halacha we already discussed. And it's Rabbi Yisi is coming to say that there's two halachas. There's Yeshloi, which, and that we said in the Mishnah, what is Yeshloi? It has to be that you have the bowl of the earthenware, of the pottery in the hand. But, says Rabbi Yisi, that's only Be'afa Lavin. But Be'afa Shachar, even if you don't have it, but since then you have the concept of Yotze Hashar, which is even though you don't have, someone else has here, someone else is going to have it, and therefore you don't have to actually have the black earth yourself to sell it to someone else. Now, the Gemara tells us that a Mamer Yohab Zuzi, a Mamer would give money, Mechime Aili Afra, when the seller had already gathered together the black earth into his house, only then would he go ahead and buy it. So the Gemara says, come on, who is a Mamer doing like? Iker Mamer, if he had like a Mamer Ha'amacha Yasu. You're not allowed to buy yet if it's not made into the bowls. The mayor says it doesn't differentiate. It says it hasn't made it the bowl. What does it help that he gathered the earth, the black earth, into his house? It's not yeshlei. And then you run into the problem about sabisa. You run into the problem that it might go up in the interim, which is the problem about paying up front. because then you're getting back more than what the money was given. And the Rabbi Yisi, if he holds like Rabbi Yisi, Ha'amar Afa Pishen Lezeh Yesh Lezeh, he says you don't even have to gather the earth into the house. Because even though you're paying up front and it's like a loan to the seller, but even though he's going to give back and it's going to be worth more, you have the concept of someone else has it, like Yatsa Ashar. So he doesn't have to have it at all. So what's this middle ground that a Maimer did that he only would buy if the seller already had the earth gathered into his house? So the Gemara explains, La'ilam ki Rabbi Yisi. Truthfully, a Maimer held like Rabbi Yisi. And again, according to Rabbi Yisi, the seller wouldn't even have to have gathered the earth to be allowed to sell it. But about Aser Da Maimer, in the location of where a Maimer lived, Ashik Afra, earth was very expensive and it wasn't so common. Now, Idma Aili Afra, if the seller already gathered the dirt, the earth, so then some chadaite, then each party is confident and they know that, okay, fine, even though it's expensive and it's not so common, I see he already gathered the earth. And therefore, the one who would back out would receive a mishapara because it's like the contract was already made up. They're already confident it's going to go through. And therefore, v'yabaluzuzi, so then the Amin would give the money because you're right. Essentially, it was like a beast. You don't have to make it into bulls. You don't have to have anything because even though this one doesn't have, someone else has, but again, since it was expensive, then people would think, okay, maybe it's not going to happen. But when I see he's gathering the earth, oh, then I know it's going to happen. And then he was ready to give the money. But if the guy didn't gather the earth yet, then the parties are not confident because maybe the seller's never going to find the earth because it was more rare where he lived. Therefore, there's no mishapara if someone would back out before the earth was gathered by the seller because really no party is confident. The whole point of mishapara is because there were confidence going through and then one party's backing out. Rather, there was only being given based on the situation of doubt, and that's why a maimer wouldn't pay money yet. Because in that situation, the money actually would not acquire. Because we only say it's acquiring if we say that it's going to create a mishapara. That's the whole point. Although we hold mois like kindness, but it creates a mishapara. Here, it wouldn't create a mishapara if the earth wasn't there. And therefore, if it would go up in the interim, it would turn out that it was ribis, because that it would be coming out that it's because he paid him up front the money, that he's giving him back something more expensive later on, because it's not that his money acquired it for him, because it's not even creating a mishapara. Therefore, Amim wouldn't give money in his place where he lived, even though he had like a BC, until the earth was gathered by the seller. Now the Mishnah told us that regarding all these things that we say that it's considered yeshloi, so regarding the dung, the animal dung, for fertilizer, that a person could purchase from the seller at all points in time in the year. Because that's always considered available, the animals are always creating dung, that's already always considered yeshloi. Now Rabbi Yisi disagreed, and he held, no, it has to be available, has to be there in the person's compost pile. And the Chacham, no, they said it's permitted. So the Gemara asks, Chacham, how in Tandakama? The Chacham are the same as Tandakama. Tandakama says it's permitted all year round. And the Chacham said, Matirim. So what's the repetition that the Chacham are saying different than the Tandakama? So Amar Rabba, Rabba says, as a continued Talmud Beis, he says, Yemeisag Shom Meke Benayim. Now the difference between them are in the winter months. And that is because the Tandakama said, Kol Yemeisag Shom. Tandakama says, you can sell it all year round to the buyer and it's not a problem about Einloi. Now, on that, Rabbi Yisi disagreed and he says that no. He says the opposite. He says it doesn't make a difference summer or winter. The seller cannot sell it until he has the actual animal dung in his pile of where all the animal excrement goes. Now, then in the Mishnah, when it says Chacham Matirin, is that they hold that even though the seller doesn't have, but other people have, he's coming from the concept of even though, not that it's yeshloi, it's coming from the fact of even though he doesn't have, other people have, but that's only if it's the summer months. The reason for that is because in the summer months, everybody has, I mean, there are definitely people that have the animal dung, and the reason being is because it goes through the whole process of decomposing through the winter months, and then it becomes this fertilizer. That's in the summer months. But in the winter months, that's not necessarily that people have that because it's through the winter that then it develops and then it turns into good fertilizer. So the difference between the Chacham and the Tanakam is that the Tanakam will hold that you could always do Pisuk. And the Chacham that said Matirim, when do they say Matirim? In the summer months, but not in the winter months, because then you don't say necessarily that Apishain Lazer, Yesh Lazer, people don't necessarily have in the winter months. They have in the summer months. Now the Mishnah said, Upaisigimai Kishar HaGavaya, that regarding this pisuk, where again the buyer is giving money up front, he's only going to get the delivery months later. So we said that if it's yeshloi, so or yetzashar, that will take care of the problems about this potential for ribis. Moreover, says the Mishnah, if the buyer wants to, he can make up beforehand that he wants to make up that if regarding this thing that he's paying up front, if ultimately the price goes down by the time he gets the delivery, that he wants to be able to get the better end of the deal. That is, the money that he's giving, he should be getting the amount, the quantity of the lower price by the time the delivery happens. Now, and that's what the Mishnah is saying, but if he didn't make this up beforehand when he did the Pisuk, then he has to, by default, accept the delivery for the price value, market value, when it was the more expensive time when he originally paid for it. Now, on that, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says that no, that actually the buyer doesn't have to make up. Automatically, if by the time delivery happens, the market value has gone cheaper, then he deserves to get that quantity of the cheaper price, even though he didn't make up before. And that's the Machlekes, Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara brings the following incident regarding this Machlekes. Who gave the Abzuzi? There was a certain person that gave money, Lenadunya de Bechamua, for the dowry of his father-in-law. In other words, his father-in-law had made up with him to sell the dowry to create a purchase of the jewelry for his daughter. Now, the father-in-law supplied the money so that it should be prepared for that day. And he designated his son-in-law as a shliach to go ahead and do the piece, meaning go to the jeweler, go to 47th Street, here, take the money, and they'll deliver it by the time the chasna happens. So the father-in-law deputized his son-in-law to go ahead and get the jewelry for the dowry for his daughter. Now, throughout the engagement, ultimately the dowry, that jewelry, had gone down in value. Now, the chassan, the groom, wanted to back out because his father-in-law is not going to want to get such a raw deal now. What do you mean? Look, by the time the chassan happened, the jewelry went way down, and you got ripped off. You know, we're not going to go ahead and pay such outlandish prices for the value of money that we're giving. So Aslik Amid Rav Papa, so they came in front of Rav Papa. So Amalei, so Rav Papa said to the chassan, he says, look, if you made up before and when you paid up front, and you said, it's okay, I just got engaged, I don't need the jewelry up until the chasna time. Now, if you made up with him that, like we say, shar gevaya, which means to say that you get the better end, which is actually the cheaper price by the time the delivery happens, then shakal kashta, then you could take how it's worth right now, which the price of the jewelry went way down. But vilay, if you didn't make that up beforehand, then shakal kimikar, then you have to take according to the more expensive price that you made up when you gave the money up front, which essentially Rav Papa was passing like the Tanakama of our Mishnah, which you have to have specified that in the time of Pesach, and if you didn't, unlike Rabbi Yehuda, then you're going to have to get the more expensive price from before. Now that Amali Rabban Rav Papa. Now the Rabban asked Rav Papa's Pesach. They said, what? V'iloi Pasik shakal kimikar. They said, we don't understand. You're saying that if he didn't do Pesach, if he didn't make it up beforehand, he's going to have to take according to the more expensive price how he had paid originally. On that, they asked, Mois Ninu, ultimately, what was it? What happened to that transaction? All it was that the chassan gave to the seller money. Umois lo kanu, we know, as we taught in the previous parak, money doesn't acquire things. What acquires is meshicha. That they never got the delivery. So what was the acquisition here that you're forcing him to take by the previous price? So Amalur Rapapa said to them, no, anon nami, me also, when I said my psak, likabuli ala mishapara kamina. I was just saying in regards to the halacha of mishapara, as the beginning of Paragazov talks about, that yes, it's the meshicha, it's the chayfetz that creates the acquisition, the transaction that you can't back out anymore. But money, although it doesn't create the acquisition, but it does create a mishapara. If one of them wants to back out, then he gets the curse of mishapara. That's what I was saying for. In other words, if he had made it beforehand that he wants to get the cheaper price, if by the time it's delivered it's cheaper, then it's the seller who, if he's not fulfilling his condition to give like the cheaper price like they had made up, he's going to be retracting, and then the seller is going to get the mishapar. But if the buyer, the chassan, did not make up beforehand, then now when the price goes down and he doesn't like it now because he's getting the run of the deal, he's the one who's backing out, and then the lekech, the chassan, he's the one that's accepting the mishapar. You're right, I didn't say that it's a done deal, but I said that since money was given, and if he didn't specify, then he, the chassan, is going to get the mishapar. Still the Gemara asks on the Pesach of Rav Papa, Amalei Ravin Rav Papa. He asks, Umimai. He asked a critical analysis question on Rav Papa's Pesach. He says, how do you know that the halacha of our Mishnah, the Tanakama, that required that you have specified beforehand at the time of the pisik of the upfront payment that you want to get kishar gavaya, like the cheaper price, if it's cheaper by the time of the delivery is, that halacha is even dirabanan, that's like dirabanan depligio led Reb Shimon, who they disagree with Reb Shimon, which is brought in the previous parak of Perak HaZav and of Memdalim at Aleph. The army that they say mo'is loikon, they say money does not acquire at all. In other words, they say that everyone could back out halachically, not just the seller, but the consumer could also back out. And although you could back out, but when he backs out, he's just going to get the mishapara, but he could back out. Even if the price doesn't change, still he could back out, but you'll get the mishapara. Now, the question they're asking Rav Papa is, he paskins like the Tanakhama in contrast to Rabbi Yehuda. Seemingly that would be because he wants to paskin like the Rabbanan, which we always go like the majority versus an individual opinion. Another Ravina's question is saying, how do you know that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is like the Rabbanan who disagree with Reb Shimon, and hence you want to say that to paskin like the Tanakhama like you did, where although they say that Mois are not Kaina, Vafilahochi, and however, in spite of that, our Mishnah tells us that when the price does change. And then you could say that since the money was only given on the condition with the intention to receive it as it is right now at a later point in time, meaning he gave money up front and he's going to get the delivery at a later point in time. So you would think maybe to say that, no, his intention is that he knows he's not going to get delivery until a later time. It's that he wants to get the cheaper price. That's what you would entertain to say. And even so, if you're saying that the halacha is like the Rabbanan, we don't say that. Rather, e-pasek, if he specified explicitly kishah ha-gavaya, that he wants to get like the cheaper price, then shaku kadahashta, then he could take how it is right now in the cheaper price. Eloi pasek, if he didn't specify, then shaku kadahashta, then he has to take like the way it was, the original more expensive price, or back out and get a mishapara. In other words, that's how it sounds like you're learning, because you're saying it's like Drabbanan, which it's a chiddush that it's like Drabbanan, because although you would think to say that maybe according to Drabbanan that really Mois are not Kaina, all it is that it creates a Mishapara, and that's why even the Lekech could generally back out. And you would even think that, okay, so it's only a Mishapara, and for sure over here where he's paying up front and he knows that maybe it's going to go down cheaper at some point in time, that for sure you should be able to back out even without a Mishapara, and that you would be learning, it seems like, from your psak. That no, the Rabbanan are saying that no, in spite of that, the halacha is that he cannot back out because if he does, he will get a mishapara. That asked Ravina to Rav Papa, but Dilma, but maybe our Mishnah that requires the Tanakhama for it to be specified beforehand that he would want to get the cheaper price, if not that he could back out without a mishapara. Maybe the Tanakhama of a Mishnah is Reb Shimon, he is Reb Shimon. The Amma that he says, Mo'is Kainais, he says that actually money does acquire. And really, halachically, once the money is given, you can't back out. Now, it's only regards to the seller that the Rabbanan were mesakin that he could back out, as long as Meshicha wasn't done, and that if the seller backs out, although he could, but then he gets a Mishapara. But the Lekech, actually, Reb Shimon holds, even if he wanted to, he can't back out in a regular case when it Lo Nishtan Ashar, that the price did not fluctuate. Now, therefore, when the price does change, so since Reb Shimon holds that Mois are kainais, that the giving the money, like in this story where the chassan give the money, it does acquire, so the consumer cannot back out, and therefore you would understand the halacha of the Mishnah, when he specified and he made up beforehand that he's going to be able to get the cheaper price later on, then shakal kiyashta. That's what we would understand the halacha of the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, that he could take it like the cheaper price right now. But Eloi Pasek, but if he did not make up beforehand, Shaka Kimikar, then he would have to take according to the original more expensive price, Mishun Dekani Luzuzi, because again, we'd be going like Reb Shimon, that his money already acquired for him. So if he didn't make up, you already acquired it, so it's too late. Of course, you're going to have to take according to the previous expensive price. Aval Rabbanon, but this is the point that Ravina contends and says, but according to Rabbanon, who they say that even the consumer is allowed to generally back out, even when it doesn't change the price. The only thing that the money would acquire is only that if he's going to back out, he's going to get a mishapara. Therefore, says Ravina, it would be logical to say that when the price does change and he didn't give money, meaning although he gave money, it was only with the intention of getting it at a later point in time, I would tell you that actually you're not even going to get a mishapara, even if he didn't specify. Because bain pasik, bain loy pasik, shakal kehashta, whether he specified before and he didn't specify, he should be allowed to take according to the cheaper price right now. Why? Because the daiti, the inish, the understanding, the thought, the acquiescence of a person is that if he's giving money up front right now to only get the delivery at a later point in time, is a tarazila. Of course he has in mind that if it's going to change in the interim, I'm paying up front, that of course I should be able to get the cheaper price by the time the delivery happens. And therefore, Ravina's question is that the Rabbanan of Reb Shimon would actually hold like Reb Yehuda of our Mishnah, because the Tanakhama of a Mishnah is actually logical to say it's Reb Shimon and not Rabbanan, and therefore then actually he's the Yachid, and Reb Yehuda actually would be going like the Rabbanan, who they're the Rabban. And therefore, why are you passing like the Tanakhama, which is like Reb Shimon, you should actually be passing like Reb Yehuda, where even if they didn't make up beforehand, as we said, the logic of the Rabbanan would be that in all situations, he'd be able to take the cheaper price right now. So Amar Lei, so Rav Papa responded to him. He says, it's incorrect what you're trying to say. He says, Amar de Amar Reb Shimon, when did Reb Shimon say this concept that the consumer cannot back out? That's Bechad Tara. That's when it's one market value. In other words, where the market value did not change. Or if the one who made up beforehand gave it with the intention to receive the money to receive the product right away, and within that time frame, the market already changed. It was very volatile right away. Where, again, in both of those cases, when they did the piece, when they gave the money up front, it wasn't with the intention of, oh, I'm going to get it months later, so of course I want to get the cheaper price. No, he was giving it for right now. That's where Reb Shimon says that then the Lekeach can't back out. But Bechad Tari, but like the case that we're discussing in our Mishnah, when there's two market prices, meaning it was originally when he had paid, and then there's the cheaper price is worth right now at the time of the delivery, says Rav Papa, me Amar? Did Reb Shimon say in such a situation that then the Lekeach can't back out? It's not true. The Reb Shimon would agree that the Lekeach could back out, and the only thing he would get would be a Mishapar. In other words, he agrees that there you won't say Mo'i's kindness, that it's a done deal and that it's sold. Actually, the Lekeach will be just like the Meicher, that he could back out, but he'll just get a Mishapar. And therefore, says Rav Papa, even if you would want to say that the Tanakhama of a Mishnah is like Reb Shimon, so that you would be excusing him from the problem of the Mishapara, you would still require to have a specification beforehand that he would want to have it like Kishar HaGavaya. And if he doesn't specify and he backs out, then he would get a Mishapara. And that same halacha, which you want to say, oh, that would be like Reb Shimon, the same thing would be according to Rabbanan. The reason being is what Reb Papa has explained, because they don't disagree when it's trei tara, when it's two different market values. They say the same thing. They both hold the same halachic concept that, in other words, Reb Shimon is not more logical. You said Reb Shimon is more logical because, okay, you're saying that he has to specify. Because if he doesn't specify, oh, then he has to take the previous price. Well, who's that like? That's like Reb Shimon, because Reb Shimon says, you usually can't even back out. Now you would want to back out. Who cares that the market value changed? You have to make up beforehand. If not, your moist was kinder for you. And that's just probably not true. In that case, Reb Shimon would be the same as Rabbanan. Reb Shimon also holds like Rabbanan. Rabbanan generally say the Lekeach could back out. Says Reb Papa, when there's two different market values, even Reb Shimon would agree that, oh, I'm giving money up front. Of course I would want 3 months ahead if it's cheaper to get that cheaper price. And therefore he would also be able to retract according to Reb Shimon, and he would just get a Mishapara. And therefore you wouldn't gain anything by saying it's Reb Shimon versus Rabbanan to say that it's only Reb Shimon and therefore I should have passed him like Rabbanan, which like Reb Yehuda is not true. Rabbanan and Reb Shimon would be the same. Either way, that would be the opinion of the Tanakhama, not like the Yachid of Reb Yehuda. And he proves his point. He says, because if you don't say what I'm saying, that Reb Shimon agrees that when there's two different market values, that then the Lekeach could back out, and all he'll get is a Mishapara, the Mishapara be Lekeach Reb Shimon lesley? So what are you telling me, that Reb Shimon doesn't hold that there's ever going to be a Mishapara by Lekeach? Because you can never have such a situation. If you say that in all situations, the moment the Lekeach gives the money, the deal is done for him, he can never back out, the Meicher could back out. And the Meicher gets a Mishapara if he backs out. Because although it's not a full-fledged kinyan until the object is done Mishicha, but once the money is given, the Lekeach can't back out, the Meicher could. So that means to say the Lekeach never can have a Mishapara. Because before the money is given, there's not even a Mishapara. then it's maybe mechusar mana, then he's lacking trustworthiness, but there's no mishapar, there's no curse on mishapar, there's only when the money is given. But once the money is given, he can't be back out. So you tell me that Kech never has a problem with mishapara? But on that, the Gemara says, "V'chitei ma'achinami." If you're going to say and entertain that's maybe Reb Shimon holds mishapar is only for the seller, but V'tanya will learn the brisa which brought previously enough in Chesam Alv, which this brisa was Reb Shimon who said this. He said the following words. He says, "Mikol makom kach halacha." Ultimately, that is the halacha that the kinyan only happens with the actual thing that's being bought. The purchased item has mishicha, has the kinyan done to it. So even though money is given, that does not finalize the kinyan. But the sages said that whoever pays and whoever if the money was given, then whoever will collect retribution from the generation of the flood, he'll also punish the person that backs out of a deal that money was really given. Now, my mikam mokum, what does Reb Shimon mean when he says, however, that's the halacha? What that sounds like an inclusive statement. Isn't that who he's saying? Is that because it doesn't make a difference if it's the buyer or if it's the seller, that this is the halacha, but he'll get a mishapara. So you see that the halacha of mishapara applies not just to the seller, but even to the lekeach. So Ella rather explains Rav Papa, kikam Reb Shimon, because when did Reb Shimon say his halacha, the lekeach cannot even back out? Not that he gets a mishapara, he can't even back out. That's b'chad tar. It's only if it's the same value. Same value, your money already done the deal for you. Betray tar loyama, but if it's, let's say, paying up front, and then there's a possibility of being a cheaper price later on, there Reb Shimon didn't say that, and Reb Shimon would agree that the lekeach could back out and only has a mishapara, which is exactly the opinion of the Rabbanan generally, and therefore Reb Papa's halacha is resolved, that he was like the halacha of the Rabbanan, not just like Reb Shimon when he passed like the Tana Kama versus Reb Yehuda. Now, the Gemara asked one more question according to Reb Papa's psak. Amli Rav Acha Berei D'Rav Rav Ashi says, but v'tepik lei, but let it just be that actually the Rav Papa explained, he says that I didn't say that it's a done deal for the chassan if he made up or not. It's just that I was saying who's going to get the mishapara. If he made up before, and then the seller will get a mishapara. If he didn't make up before, and then he wants to back out now because the price is much cheaper, he'll get the mishapara. And that asks Rav Acha Berei D'Rav, but there shouldn't be a mishapara by the chassan who had paid for the jewelry of the dowry for a different reason. Because the shliach shavi me'ikaram, his father-in-law had made him a shliach to go ahead and pay up front by the jeweler to get the jewelry for the delivery by the time of the chasna. Now, who's backing out? It's his father-in-law's backing out. Because his father-in-law's not going to want to pay. It's his father-in-law who's paying. He doesn't care. Let his father-in-law pay $5,000, $10,000. Now, therefore, what could the chassan, the groom, do that he's getting the curse of the mishapara? What did he do wrong? He is not backing out. His father-in-law is backing out. Now, moreover, as Rashi points out, neither could the father-in-law get the mishapara because he could say, what do you mean? He could tell the chassan, what are you doing? You should have made up beforehand. You knew that the delivery of jewelry is only for 3 months or 6 months from now. And you should have made up beforehand that if it's going to be cheaper, that you'll be able to get the cheaper price at delivery. And therefore, although I made you the shliach, but as a classic term that's brought in the Gemara many times, l'skuni shadartech v'loy la'avasi, I made you my agent to make it good for me, not to make things worse for me. And therefore, for that, I didn't make you a shliach. So he doesn't get the mishapara because he wasn't a shliach for that. And neither should the son-in-law get the mishapara because he's not backing out, his father-in-law's backing out. So why does he get the mishapara? So Malais, Rav Ashi responded, he says, you're right. It's not talking about a case where the son-in-law was just an agent, just a shliach, just doing a service for his father-in-law. It's talking about bitagri dezav namazvin. The son-in-law, the chassan, was a handler. He's someone that he was a merchant, that he buys and sells. He made up what his father-in-law says, Tati, how much do you want to spend? Says, I want to spend this amount. Says, great, I'll get you a great deal. Now, he gets the money from his father-in-law. Then he goes and he wants to make money off his father-in-law. He goes to the jeweler and says, how much are you willing to sell this for me for? So he gets a cheaper price. And then what he does is that he buys, he's the one that's buying from the seller, and then he sells it to his father-in-law. So because of that, that makes sense why he's going to get the mishapara if he backs out, because now it's time of the chasna. He's like, whoa, I got a raw deal. It went down by half. I could have made double the amount that I made. So he wants to back out. It's him that's backing out, not his father-in-law, because his father-in-law already had his deal with his son-in-law. and therefore he's going to get the Mishnah Parah. That's where Papa's halacha was being passed like on the Tanakama. If he made up, then he could back out. If not, then he's going to get the Mishnah Parah. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of these halachas, talking about now a sabisa, which is regarding a loan, but not of money, rather of an item, of a product, where you lend it to get back that same exact item. Seemingly that's very benign. You just give it, I'll give it back to me later on. Problem is, as we've spoken about previous dafim, it could go up in the interim. If it goes up in the interim, similar to the halacha, the previous Mishnah, Pisuk, when you give the money up front, then when you get the item that's being sold, in the interim it could go up in price. Turns out that, let's say in the case of Pisuk, that the seller, it was like a loan from the money. Here, the other way around, when you give the item, you lend him a certain item, and then he gives it back to you at a later point in time, then the item might have gone up in price. Then he was the borrower, he was using that item, and he gave it back now to you, the lender, and you get more back than what you gave. That's called a vak ribis, a rabbinic halacha of ribis. So on that, our Mishnah explains the following halacha. Malva odem es aris of chitin. A person could lend, landowner could lend his sharecroppers wheat, bechitin, to get back wheat, if lezera, if he was lending him the wheat for use as seed to plant in the field. Which, again, as we explained, the Gemara will explain the reason for this, although generally this would be the classic halach of sa b'sa, which is problematic, but regards to seed, that's okay. Avaloy lechel, but not for eating purposes. For eating purposes, you don't gain anything because then you're actually going to have the halachic classic example of sa b'sa. You're lending him a certain amount of wheat to eat. He's giving you back. Then it might go up in the interim. That's problematic. That you can't do. But for seeding, that we'll see, and the Gemara will explain why that's permitted. Now, Mishnah explains why was it necessary to say this Mishnah. The reason is because Shahayu Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel was stringent, and he was malves aris of chitin mechitin lezera. He would do the same thing. He would lend to his sharecroppers wheat to get back the same amount of wheat if for, it was for seeding. But he had his condition, his stipulation was that if it was b'yeker v'huzlo, if let's say when he lent him the wheat, it was at an expensive price. By the time they wanted to give it back to him, it was a cheaper price. Or when he lent it to him, it was cheap. And by the time they wanted to pay back to him the sharecroppers, it was expensive. He would only take back, and he was stringent on himself, like the cheaper price. He never wanted to take anything that would even smell from ribis, which is, if he lent cheaper and he gets back more expensive, that could seem like a loan on ribis. So he would always take the cheaper price. That's what our Mishnah teaches us, that the halacha is not like that. But it's not because the halacha is like that. It's just that he wanted to be stringent on himself, but rather, like we said, you could lend to the sharecroppers wheat for wheat, even if when you lend them it's cheaper, and then when they give it back to you it's expensive, and you don't have the problem of sabasa. So our Gemara explains by quoting a brisa. Tanabon, learn the brisa. Malve adam es aris of chitin mechitin lezera, like our Mishnah said, you could lend to your sharecroppers wheat to get back the same amount of wheat if it's for seeding. Says the Braisa, the Braisa makes a qualification. When did we say this halacha is shaloi yarad? If the sharecropper didn't go down yet into the field to work it for any working purposes, then you can go ahead and do this loan of the wheat for the seeding of this sabasa, which literally say the same measurement for the same measurement. Aval yarad asr. But if he already went down and started working the field, then, as the Gemara will shortly explain, it's forbidden now to do the loan of the seed for to get back the same amount of seed. So the Gemara first asks, Maishna Tana Didan, why was it different, the Tana of our Mishnah? The Loi Kamaflik Bein Yared Ubein Lo Yared, they did not differentiate between if he started working the field or didn't. It just said you could go ahead and do this loan of the seed. Maishna Tana Bra, why is it different, the Tana of the Braisa, the Kamaflik Bein Yared Ubein Lo Yared, that did differentiate? And it says, wait, you could do this only if he didn't start working the field yet. If he did, then you can't. Why? What's this machlekes? So Amrav, he says, actually, it's not a machlekes. It says, Reb Idi Asbar Nahali, Reb Idi, it gave me to understand that Ba'asra the Tana Didan, in the location of the where the Tana of our Mishnah was, the custom was that Arisa Yohev Bizra, that the sharecropper would generally provide the seed. In other words, you have a landowner, he doesn't want to do the work, but he doesn't want it to waste. And then you have people that don't have land, but they want to do the work. So they're called sharecroppers. And they go ahead and they work the field, they do all the work, and then they share the profits with the landowner. Now the question is, who provides the seeds? So that's what the Gemara is saying. The Tana, the Mishnah, in his place, it was the sharecropper that would provide the seeds. Now, therefore, the following halacha evolves. Because if the sharecropper provides the seeds, it turns out that what is the ramification of the formulation of the seed in this transaction? As the Gemara explains, Bein Yared Ubein Lo Yared. So therefore, the town of a Mishnah held, whether he started working on the field or whether he didn't start working on the field, but Kam Delo Yav Bizra, as long as the sharecropper didn't yet give the seed, and again, that's his responsibility generally in the place of where the town of a Mishnah was, so Matzi Misalik Leis, and therefore the homeowner could still get rid of the sharecropper from working his field. And therefore, even if he went down to the field to rid his sharecropper, and they started plowing, but since it's within the rights of the homeowner to remove him, because if, let's say, a sharecropper says, I have no seed. No, you have no seed. It's your responsibility. That's what we do in our place. You don't have seed. Okay, get out of here. Because it's your responsibility. So even though he started working, he could still remove him. Therefore, when they do this loan, and he lends him the seed and he seeds it, so when the price of wheat, he gives him the wheat and then it goes up at a later point in time, that's not going to be a problem about the classic sabisa, which is a problem about it's like a halva, like you lent him and on ribbis, you're getting back something more expensive. The reason being is it's not considered like a loan. Why not? Because of v'chi kanachis, when the sharecropper went down to work the field, lebatzim ahachi kanachis, he was going down with the intention of taking a cheaper price in his sharecropping. In other words, it's like when he gets the loan of the seed, since it was his responsibility and he didn't have, and the homeowner could really get rid of him, when he gives him the seed at this point in time, it's like he's now contracting regarding the sharecropping. It's like as if he works the field with the condition that he's going to give the homeowner for the seed that he lent him a lesser portion than the regular sharecropper usually takes, where he usually takes a certain amount for his effort. Now he's agreeing to take less than the sharecropper usually takes, commensurate with the amount of seed that he's getting from the owner who doesn't usually provide it. And that, it's with that intention that he's going to contract his working as a sharecropper to take less than the regular sharecropper usually takes. And that's how we're going to formulate the giving of the seed, not as a loan of that, but rather as a proviso in the contract of how much he's going to work, and he's going to get less now. So it's not a loan. Now, and therefore, as we explained, that's even if he started working, because unless the seed was given, which it wasn't, it was his job, and he could have still gotten rid of him. So it's still, you could still contract for the sharecropping. But in the place of the town of the Braisa, Mari Ara Yo Bizra, their custom was that the owner of the field provided for the seed. Now, so although he generally provided for the seed, and in this case he's given the seed, so what does it mean he's lending it to him? Shouldn't he have to provide? Now, this landowner, he had very high quality field. He was very proud of his field. So he changed from the custom of the city, and he was saying, whoever wants to share crop for me, fine, but you have to provide the seed yourself. Now, that's why the halacha was, according to the Tanya of the Braisa, that if he made up with him beforehand, before, in other words, Ilo Yarad, if he didn't start work in the field yet, the Matzim is Salikle, so then, even though he's supposed to provide the seed, but if the sharecropper didn't even start work in the field yet, so then he could still get rid of him. So, Kiko Noches, so then when the sharecropper would come, if the seed contract would change before he started working, which was, I just want you to know, you have to provide the seed. I know everyone here in this city, the landowner does, but I want you to. You don't have? Fine, I'll provide, but then you should know, Kikonachas, when you're going down, you're going to work for a cheaper price. In other words, and it's not going to be a loan. That's how the Tana Braisa qualified it, because only then could he get rid of him to say it's contracting at that point in time, and therefore not a loan. So even if it goes up in price, it's not regarding the seed. It wasn't lending him the seed. He was providing the seed as a proviso that you're going to get less as a sharecropper. But Iyarad, if the sharecropper already started going down to work in the field, and before he started working, the landowner did not make up with him that he has to provide for the seed himself. It's only later on that he decided, hey, wait a second, I have this great field. What's going on over here? I don't want this sharecropper that I have to provide the seed. Now, and then later on, he made up with the sharecropper that I want you to know you have to give the seed. And he said, okay, fine, but I don't have seed. So then the going down to the field cannot be considered right now as if you're contracting to say that, oh, so when he contracted, it was to get less. Because the lematzim misalik lay. He can't get rid of him right now. He already started doing the work. What are you saying? He's not providing the seed, so he didn't consider start doing the work. It's not true. He doesn't have to provide the seed. It was the owner that the customer that said he has to provide it. And therefore, if he is making up with him right now that, oh, you have to give the seed, and the worker says, fine, I already started working, I'll stay in this job, but I don't have seed. Oh, I'll lend it to you. That's going to be a loan. It can't be contracting because the contract already started when he started working because that wasn't one of his obligations. And since it's going to be considered as a loan, that's why it's us, so that's why the Talmud Braisa says it's going to be forbidden once you start to do the work to give the wheat, to get back the same amount of wheat, even if it's for seed, from the sharecropper, because that's going to be a loan, and that's the classic halacha, as we'll see in the next mishnah of Sabasa, which that is forbidden. Tanabon, we learn in another Braisa, another halacha in Sabasa, that Ibn Adam Lachadeh, a person could tell his friend, as he could turn top of Ayin Heim and Aleph, Helveinu Korchitin, lend me a certain measurement of wheat, and v'kaitis leidamim, and he sets it for a certain price, meaning they evaluate the amount of wheat that he's lending him right now, according to the market value, and that's what the time of the b'raisa says, huzlu, if the price of wheat goes down by the time he has to pay him back, so nice lechitim, so then he gives him back the same amount of wheat that he got, because then that's no problem about sabasa, because sabasa is only if it goes up in price, then you're giving back for the loan more than what you got, it goes down, so then you could even give back the wheat itself. Hukru, if it went up in price, then nice and demayim. Then you give the money, because then you can't give the wheat itself, because then you're going to be giving more expensive than what you got, because now the price went up. If you give back the money of how much it was when you had borrowed it, so then you're giving back exactly what you got. That's the halach of sabasa. Now, but the Gemara asks on the braisa, but vale katsas. But what do you mean? They made up a value of money when the loan happened, and therefore the question is, even if it goes down in price, why are we saying that the borrower could give him back wheat? He should have to give him back money because it's like he lent him money because they really evaluate it at a monetary value. So if it went down the price, let's say the wheat was worth $10 and now it's worth $5, why is he allowed to give him back just wheat, which is like you give him back $5? He should have to give him back $10. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rav Sheshi explains the Hachkam, and this is what the Tanya of the Braisa was saying, that if they made up a set money, they evaluated for money, so then you're not going to run the problem of sabasa if it goes up. But so if it goes down, it doesn't make a difference. He can't give him back wheat. He has to give him back the money. The Braisa was saying a separate clause, a separate case. Imloy katsas, if they did not set up a certain price, then you run into the halacha conundrum of sabasa. Someone already borrowed, and they didn't evaluate that money. Now the problem is you can't do that. You can't borrow because you're going to give back, and it might have gone up in price. You're going to be violating the halacha of ribis. So that's what the Braisa says. So what do you do then? Huzlu noitel chitam. If it went down in price, okay, you're not going to be violating anything because even if you give back the same amount of wheat that was borrowed, but there's no avak ribis even because you're not giving back more than you got, you're actually giving back less. But you can give back the same product that you had borrowed. And that's what the price was saying. But if hukru, if it went up in the interim, then you run into the avak ribis. It's like you're doing ribis because you borrowed something worth $10, you give back something worth $20. And that's what the Braisa says. So in that case, nice and demeim, then you have to give the value, the monetary value, of how much it's worth during the loan, so that you don't run into the problem about sabasa. But you're right, regarding the previous case, if they were katsats, then the halacha of huzlo nois lechitim would be incorrect. It's only if you didn't do, then you give wheat. But if you made it up, then you would, in both situations, give the monetary value, because that's what they made up, that I'm not going to give you back just the wheat, which is worth $10, because it might go up or down. I'm going to give you back the money, so that would be whether it goes up or down, to give back the monetary value.